the Fourth Circuit's morning, United States v. Valley.
Good morning, Your Honors. Stephen Clark for the United States.
The verdict form in this case tells us that Valley was convicted of forcibly resisting, impeding, and interfering with federal officers.
What does forcibly mean?
What does forcibly mean? Forcibly means that some force was used by the defendant, and as a matter of fact, the government provided a definition of that in its jury instructions, in which it said forcibly means by use of force. Physical force is sufficient, but actual physical contact is not required. You may also find that a person who in fact has the present ability to inflict bodily harm upon another and threatens or attempts to inflict bodily harm upon another acts forcibly. In such case, the threat must be a present one.
Forcibly does not necessarily imply physical contact. Is that
That's correct. Now, according to the jury, Valerie did not engage in assault. The misdemeanor provision in Section 111, under which the defendant was sentenced, only applies to conduct constituting simple assault. Simple assault is merely a threat or an attempt to injure without any physical contact. But this case involves more than a mere threat or attempt to injure. Valley's conduct actually involved physical contact during resisting, impeding, and interfering.
Did you charge that?
Well, if you read the indictment carefully, Your Honor, it in the two-word clause, let me read the whole charge. It says that the defendant did knowingly and forcibly assault, resist, impede, and interfere with Ron Garber during the course of his duties. Two-word, conducting the individual search and restraining a federal inmate attempting to dispose of contraband. Now, if we put that together, if we look at each of those facts, the inmate was attempting to dispose of contraband and the officer was restraining him while the inmate was trying to dispose of the contraband. Now, I think that it gives the indictment in this case, when we read all those elements together, I think that the indictment does give fair notice to the defendant of what actually is being charged. And in fact, if we look at this case, we realize that the defendant here knew what was being charged, because right after the jury was sworn, he filed his motion regarding the instruction, intending to have the court take it out of the intending to have the court restrict the charge to simple assault. So he definitely had fair notice. He knew what was coming, and he successfully challenged us on the basis that there was no physical contact charged. The government disagrees with that analysis. It did so down below, and it does again now for the reasons that I just mentioned. When you put all these things together,
in his opinion, said that in the criminal context, of course, you can't amend or revise the charge to conform with the proof, right?
Correct.
Yeah. But his opinion is that that's what you're trying to do is.
As I understood the opinion, Your Honor, he was saying that we simply didn't allege physical contact, and therefore we were trying to amend the charge. But again, I would observe that when you have a situation like we had here with an inmate trying to dispose of contraband, that when the allegation was made that he was restrained, that restraining strongly suggests that he was physically restrained, that there was physical contact.
And well, physical is not used,
though. I grant you that.
I mean,
it's not a word restraint.
Not sort of physically restrain people, but he would be restrained by yelling at him, I would assume.
Well, I suppose also he could be considered restrained by virtue of the fact that he was in prison. But that's not the point here. I suppose also if we looked at it in a different light, if we had an allegation that the defendant had kicked at the officer, one could think of kicking as either involving physical contact or not. The point here is not whether the allegations in the indictment charged every single act involved, but whether or not the indictment gave fair notice to the defendant. And I think, when we put everything together, there was sufficient notice given to the defendant.
Well, actually, I think the threshold question in this case is, what is the meaning of simple assault for purposes of the misdemeanor version of this offense? And because that's how the penalty clause of the statute draws the line. If it's a simple assault, then you get a year or less. And if it's anything else, you get the higher penalty, 8 years, I guess it is.
Correct.
And then there's an additional category for use of a weapon.
Yeah, so that's not involved here. But
right. So we have to, as a threshold matter for this circuit, figure out what simple assault means, and then everything flows from there. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that, Your Honor, and I think that simple assault has its common meaning of a threat or an attempt to do injury to another.
It does not involve physical contact. That's sort of the line of demarcation, isn't it?
It would be the line of demarcation for simple assault versus non-simple assault, yes, Your Honor.
And in that terms, it would be assault not involving a battery.
That would also be true, Your Honor, yes. It's, again, it seems to me that we have properly alleged, by alleging the actions taking place while the defendant was being restrained, that should be sufficient to take it out of the simple assault category. If we're just talking about simple assault, but again, we have to remember that the defendant was not convicted of simple assault or any other kind of assault. He was convicted of resisting, impeding, and interfering with the officer.
Well, all those things can be done without physical contact, right? So it could be argued that he was convicted of simple assault. In fact,
well,
that's what the defendant is arguing here,
yes.
Because those words and those actions can be carried out by way of a simple assault, that is, with no physical contact, or with physical contact, taking it out of the misdemeanor offense.
Well, then we have to ask the question, why did the legislature decide to distinguish between assault and those other verbs? And I think that there is a clear distinction here. If we turn over to Section 113, for instance, the companion statute, there are various levels of assault, but there are no, none of the other verbs in Section 111 are referenced in 113. So the legislature, it seems to me, had the intention here of distinguishing between assault and the other verbs here. So it not only intended in 111 to distinguish between misdemeanor and felony assaults, but also between assault, it wanted to distinguish assault from resisting, impeding, and interfering.
Well, why wouldn't the penalty portion of Section 111 then have repeated that distinction in the modes of commission of the offense that is in the general statutory language?
Well,
the opening paragraph says, you know, it's illegal to do all these things against a federal officer.
Correct.
And then the penalty provision just distinguishes between all those things which constitute simple assault and those that don't.
Well,
it doesn't repeat the various modes of commission.
But that's along with the point I'm trying to make, Your Honor, is that it only uses the word assault, simple assault. It does not use those other verbs. So we are left with the other verbs constituting felonious conduct.
As the statute contains this clause, where the acts in violation of this section constitute only simple assault, which suggests that we would really apply the same analysis to these other verbs that we do to simple assault, then.
Why would it not distinguish them, or rather include those other verbs in that word? And why does the legislature in Section 113 use only the word assault rather than these other verbs? And that's, again, one reason why I think that we do have a clear distinction by the legislature separating assault from other kinds of conduct.
Now, this instructs us to try to determine whether these other acts constitute only simple assault. Using the assault analysis with respect to all these other activities, shouldn't we?
Well, if that's the case, again, Your Honor, why didn't the legislature include that in its language? It seems to me that it knew what it was doing, and that it was distinguishing between assault and the other types of conduct. And even if you would rule that the other types of conduct could constitute simple assault, I would still argue, as I did before, that the indictment here sufficiently charges enough contact to put the defendant on notice that he was going to be held accountable for a felony rather than a misdemeanor. And consequently, Your Honors, the government requests that the district court be reversed and that the case be remanded for sentencing Valerie as a felon under the guidelines, which would have given him a range of 51 to 63 months. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Williams.
Good morning, Your Honors. Stephen Williams for the defendant. I want to address, first of all, a couple matters that were just raised by the government. First off, with respect to the issue of whether physical contact was actually alleged in the indictment, that issue was not raised in their initial brief on appeal. It's not there. The argument that they have presented to this court is one that was also discussed, and that is whether the statute distinguishes, when it comes to simple assault, with respect to punishment, between something that could solely be described as assault and something that could also be described. And I mean also, because it doesn't matter that in this case they didn't find him guilty of assault. They could have listed all of them, and the analysis would be the same. Under the government's argument, if they've also specifically found resistance, impeding, interference, or even though it wasn't the case in this particular indictment, intimidation. If the jury specifically finds any of those things, even if there's no physical contact under the government's argument, that should be subject to the felonious penalty of 8 years. And that result seems absurd. It seems absurd that the legislature, or the Congress, could have intended that. Now, I would also suggest that while in addition to the issue of the indictment being put on notice, not being raised in the initial brief on appeal, even if this court were to consider that, it doesn't state by use of physical contact. It doesn't necessarily imply that. Attempting to restrain does not imply, as has been discussed, that there was in fact physical contact. If the officer was approaching, this is Officer Garver as an example, was approaching Mr. Valerie and commanded him to turn around and put his hands by the back, and Mr. Valerie had flipped around, he would be resisting his attempts to restrain him, and there would not have been any physical contact, and he could have raised his fist and threatened him, and there would not have been any physical contact, and that all would have been resisting. And it all probably would have been intimidating, impeding, interfering with, and it also would have been an assault. If he would have swung at him, just for the purpose, only for the purpose, if you can imagine a circumstance, and this is the only one I can imagine, if the only reason someone swings at an officer is for the purpose of causing injury, for no other reason whatsoever, and misses, that would be a simple assault. And it might not be a resisting, it might not be an impeding, it might not be an interfering with, though it probably would be. And it might not be intimidating, but I can't imagine how a jury would see that distinction, or really anyone else, but I'm trying to. I'm struggling to try to think of an example where that misdemeanor provision could actually apply under the manner in which the government suggests this court should interpret the statute. And it's very difficult to think of that. If that circumstance, you swung at an officer and missed for the sole purpose of doing injury, that's 1 year. But if you do it for the reason of intimidating, that's 8 years. That doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And there's no reason to think that that is the intention of Congress in enacting the misdemeanor provision.
What was your client serving time for?
A drug case, Your Honor. And he's still serving time, and will be for quite some time.
Well, that was my question, is how long was his sentence initially?
I can tell you that he's going to be there on that sentence for in the neighborhood of another 20 years, though I don't know. I want to place a specific number, and I wish I had
a pre-sentence report will indicate.
Yeah, it is in there. And so he does have a considerable amount of time left to do on that before serving this 1 year. I would also note that with respect to Section 113, that was raised here in argument. It was raised in the brief, and I did not address that. And at this point, I guess what I could say, though, in response to oral argument is, of course, Section 113 isn't going to say anything about resisting, impeding, interfering with someone else, anyone else, in a maritime jurisdiction. Because they can't assault you. They can't arrest you. You can resist somebody like that. You can't assault them, but obviously that's not going to be put in Section 113. So that argument to me, it seems meaningless. With respect to the additional verbs, why did Congress put them in with respect to simple assault? Well, you could ask the same question, why didn't they put them in subsection B? If you look at subsection B, which is the even more enhanced penalty for use of a dangerous weapon, which is 20 years, it includes all of the conduct. It says if you violate this statute and you use a dangerous weapon, you can get up to 20 years. It doesn't say if you resist, impede, interfere with. Now, and I am sure the government is not here to suggest that means that if you resist by means of a deadly weapon, it's still only 8 years. Because it clearly doesn't mean that. And I think it's pretty obvious from the language that in many respects, in drafting this, it's all kind of considered under the basic frame of assault. Everything's thought, these are species of assaults within the context of the correctional system, or in the context of we want to protect other federal officers from harms to them, physical harms to them, from their performance of their duties and harms that may come as a result of that. So they didn't set forth all of those different ways, and they didn't have to. They said instead where acts in violation of this statute constitute. They say only simple assault because they have to use some sort of modifier where it's only simple assault versus another type of assault in order to get to be very clear. It's in that lesser quantum of force. When you use that lesser quantum of force that doesn't involve physical contact, that's when it falls within the misdemeanor provisions. And it seems that that is a very plain reading of the statute. And although the circuit appears to have addressed that, I would suggest that is the interpretation that can be implied from some of the other circuits. And I cite to that the Nunez case, the Yates case. In the Nunez case, for example, they say the statute creates three different types of offenses, and it explains that further by saying resisting by means of simple assault, resisting by means of assault, resisting by means of assault with a deadly weapon or creating serious bodily injury. So while that wasn't the precise question presented, it was not raised, it does appear that is the plain reading that was given. Likewise with Yates, likewise with McCulligan, though I recognize that it's not as persuasive because you cannot see exactly what the indictment says and based on the instructions, it does look like maybe they were only dealing with assault, but the language the court employs in discussing the statute still seems to suggest that the entire statute is read that way, and all of these forms of conduct can constitute a simple assault, and thereby be limited to the one-year statutory maximum. By adopting the government's interpretation, as I have discussed, Your Honors, it seems like that would completely nullify the misdemeanor provision. Because I can only think of this one limited possibility where, and that is swinging at someone and missing just for the purpose of causing physical harm, and it had to be someone who didn't even know it was coming, because then you could clearly call it intimidation too. So if that would be the only time that simple assault could apply, A, it doesn't make sense, but B, you'd never see it charged anyway. And so it's clearly for the main purpose of that provision being there, because any time anybody does any forcible act, it could be characterized as one of these other enumerated acts that violate the statute very easily. And certainly, if this court were to hold so, as the government suggests, that's exactly what will happen. We will never see any opportunity for submitting that lesser-included offense to the jury. We can be sure of that. That just will not happen. Now, there may be less opportunities to take advantage of that anyway, based upon what the case law is, but and it's possible that the government suggests that Mr. Valerie had notice of what was going on. Mr. Valerie had notice of that he was charged with a misdemeanor. That's what he had notice of. He was charged with a misdemeanor. Now, he might have noticed that they wished they had done it differently, but he had notice he was charged with a misdemeanor. And anything that is exhibited otherwise, it's not raised in the brief, and it's not relevant. It is not relevant. The grand jury charged him with a misdemeanor. That is what he was convicted of. To hold, as the government suggests, would completely eviscerate the misdemeanor provision in the statute. It would render it a nullity, and the court should not do so. So we would ask that Judge Murphy's decision be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. West. Mr. Clark?
Four minutes, Mr. Tony. The term assault is a term of art. The others are not. They carry their plain meaning. They're not defined in the statute. They carry their plain meaning. And that is the sum and substance of the government's argument that we're talking about different things here. The jury didn't find the defendant guilty of assault. It clearly rejected that notion. It found the defendant guilty of those other verbs that are charged. And again, I'd ask you to reverse the decision of the judge and remand for resentencing. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks to both counsel. Case is taken under advisement.